The Six Pointer Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Six Pointer Podcast. I always say immediate post-match reaction. I'm going to say immediate post-match reaction. It's not immediate post-match reaction. This is going to be a mixed pod today.
Pre-match reaction.
We're in the Golden Lion in Sydenham. Proper authentic pub, although Luke reminded me of what happened in where we're sitting. What happened where we're sitting, bro?
Late 80s, wasn't it? Some bloke got an axe in the head. So, I hope he's all right. He's not. He's dead. But, yeah, it's. I think there's a documentary, a BBC documentary that's... about this, some sort of police cover-up, but we're not here to talk about that, bruv.
Could be a podcast in itself.
It could be. We're here to talk about Crystal Palace and their excellent form as of late, unbeaten form, since we last spoke, as well.
Yeah, so we last spoke just after the Millwall game, which is obviously a fantastic win at home. Obviously
excellent result. I very much enjoyed that one. Certainly celebrated it for... I'm still celebrating it right now.
I think we'll celebrate it for many years to come, right? Until we play them again.
Next 7 years, yeah.
So,
your place.
So, I was going to say a lot's happened since then. It hasn't, because we've only played, two league games since then. Obviously, we've had the Fulham Cup game. The league games between then have been the Ipswich game and then sort of the Fulham game sandwiched between, the meat between the sandwich, the Fulham game, with the game in midweek against Southampton. So, Ipswich game, do you know what? I watched bits of it back the other night because I remember it being a very frustrating game with obviously a very positive ending. But actually, it was a good performance from Palace. We just didn't manage to get the goal until right towards the end, did we?
No, I think that very much like Wednesday night, many people expected Palace just to turn up and turn them over, as it were. And that wasn't the case. But look, I mean, the result's the most important thing. Nkessie got the goal, didn't it? Yeah, on I think that was a Tuesday night, was it? Oh no, it was a Saturday, was it? Bloody hell, yeah. Mate, my memory is It's May Lassar then, who, as I said the other day to you, bruv, has been a revelation. You know, you think about £12.5 million for him. If you were to sell him tomorrow, Palace could justify £40 million for him. The fact that you scored that many goals in the Premier League, I think that Palace could easily make turn a profit him, and then he's fitted into this system that Palace got exceptionally well. And to think he was perhaps a bit of a, or seen as a bit of a bit part player when the season started, now he's undroppable.
He's definitely grown as a team, hasn't he? His role is now very important. I think you and I historically we've spoken about how he was not performing as we hoped he would do. I remember seeing him for thinking that he had real potential, and obviously your time at Marseille was, I suppose, not as productive as clearly he would have hoped it would have been. But start of the season, yeah, it was a bit of a slow build and start, but it's another great Dougie find, isn't it? Another great signing who's integrating the team over the season, and yeah, he's now a first pick on the team sheet, isn't he? And he gives us that extra opportunity to attack. He's not an Elise direct replacement, but he's something different, which is exciting. And he does like to run at people. He's lethal in the box, like he really is lethal in the box. I'd love to see his conversion rate, because he puts away the chances he gets presented with. And I think the other thing was he does a good rendition of the Mateta corner flag kick. So what can you say?
He does very. I always describe him as very direct, you know, sort of he gets into the box, he drives very well. Got an excellent finish in him, obviously he's scored a few headers in recent weeks as well, which is something I don't think many people associate with his game. But no, I'm a big fan of Ismaila, and I was always an admirer at Watford. So yeah, very pleased with his return, and like you say, bruv, undroppable now, and certainly a very important part of that front three that Palace have got going at the moment. I would say firing, but I think I said to you, or I said to someone else the other day, I looked at the stats in the league table. Palace don't score enough goals. You know, I mean, if we had scored perhaps 10 or 12 more goals, I think we'd be, you know, 5 or 6 places perhaps above where we are now. And at the moment, Palace sitting happy in 12th, which is like a warm bar for Palace. It's our comfortable position, but I think there are hopes that we can push ahead and perhaps, you know, have a little run towards the end of the season. I'd like to think that, you know, obviously you depend on other results going our way as well, and Wednesday night perhaps was a missed opportunity in that sense, but it's certainly not done and dusted for Palace, and there's two opportunities for Palace to get into Europe here. We're by the league, if results go our way and English clubs continue to do well in the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League, you know, the European places could go as far down as ninth, and that's not out of far out of Palace's reach. So the dream is alive, bruv, for the FA Cup and the league.
I was going to say, there's two options there, aren't there, in terms of the cup as well. And yeah, look, it's been, you know, the poor start we had is well documented. It's how we've recovered from that and pushed on since. And obviously we had doubts about whether we would recover to a sufficient standard, but I guess looking back on it, it's true to Palace form, isn't it, in terms of the slow start and pushing on from there. There have been some dips, I think. The Ipswich game, you know, you can't forget that it took 82 minutes for us to get the goal, but they came to do a job. Ipswich and Southampton as well on Wednesday night kind of not did a job on us, but played the game very well and managed Palace's strengths and weaknesses as well very well. And you know, obviously the Ipswich game was a late winner, but the Southampton game was a late save, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the goal coming so late. But I think the resilience that the team have to stay in, to maintain the game plan, to stick to the plan A, is very positive.
Did you
give us something to build from?
Did you say resilience team has, or the resilience the team has?
Both, right?
There you go. Yeah, but we're jumping ahead there, and I think
ahead, very good ahead.
There you go, jumping ahead. Yeah, I didn't even appreciate that one. Must be the Guinness. Thinking about moving on to the FA Cup game, which has obviously followed the Ipswich game, a emphatic victory against Fulham. You know, a 3-0 victory against a team which is above Palace in the table. Fulham have been performing very well this season, but as in the league, you know, only, was it last month, February, was it? I think we played them before, or maybe back into January whenever we played them. You know, Palace made that look easy against Fulham. I mean, there were very few times that I ever felt Palace were threatened. 22nd February, there you go, the 2-0. But yeah, we're talking about the 3-0 victory in the FA Cup, and it was a routine victory for Crystal Palace, who really outclassed Fulham.
Yeah, it took us a while to get going. It's probably fair to say. I think they probably had the better of the sort of the opening 10-15 minutes, and then I think the turning point was the Lerma sort of volley where it hit the bar. Was it hit the bar? He just hit the bar, didn't he?
Lerma.
Yeah, Lerma. Yeah, and I think that was kind of the turning point for us, and I think from then on we kind of just didn't look back. Two very quick goals, I think it was 3 or 4 minutes between the two. Lovely finish from Ezra, doing exactly what he's great at, right, which is carrying the ball, that drifting on the ball, which makes him a top player. I know what I love to see him do.
A word for the control from Tyrone Mitchell, though, to take the ball down and deliver it to Ezra as well, which was outstanding.
It was, yeah. Yeah, in the build up to the goal as well, they don't show it when they show the highlight of the goal, but there's a Mateta on the byline, wins the ball.
Oh,
yeah. And the build up, then it goes back.
Well, it's a bit of to and fro between him and Anderson, wasn't there? Now I think Anderson comes out of it in the end by getting a little flick on the ball, but eventually I think it might come back to Wharton or maybe Lerma or something in the middle.
Brings it to the left. Yeah, I think you said Mitchell and then into Ezra, and he just glides on the ball, which is what he's so good at. And then yeah, we did look back from there. I mean, obviously the Sarr goal was, you could argue, a bit of a bundled goal. We were in control at 2-0, weren't we? Everton. Fulham came out second half and gave it a go, but I just didn't really feel that they were ever really threatening us. I can think of two saves that Henderson had to make. And then, yeah, Nketiah with the sort of the goal with sort of 10, 15 minutes to go. So, look, it's we've talked about this before, the Wembley semi-final thing in some ways is not good because it diminishes the final and the element of getting to, but a day at Wembley, as Kev knows, it's fantastic.
Yeah, look, I mean, you mentioned Nketiah there, a great finish it was here, obviously, versus Bert Leno. I assume that he had played with many times in training at Arsenal, so perhaps knew what he was going to do in that situation. But Nketiah, you know, I didn't appreciate it until I watched on Tuesday, I think it was, the pre-match press conference. Not that, but just the fact that he scored before Wednesday night, he'd scored 3 goals in 4 games for Crystal Palace. Yeah. And I felt he was perhaps a little bit unlucky not to get a start against the Southampton, but it was a great finish for Eddie Nketiah, and he is I had a debate with someone about this, about, you know, should he start, should he not? And personally, my thoughts were he should have started against Southampton, perhaps because, you know, then you reward the good work and you encourage someone, because otherwise, if you score three goals in four games and you still don't get a start in the starting 11, you kind of got to think, well, what's the point? You know, why am I coming on and scoring goals if it doesn't lead to me getting a starting place? But,
well, I guess the context for that is that obviously Mateta was out with his
ear.
Yeah. So it gave Nketiah a chance, and let's be honest, he took it. And I think that's the thing, his all round contribution was positive as well. You know, he's, I said to you a second ago, his speed has really surprised me. I think there was a moment in the game against Southampton midweek where I think it was the keeper was chasing the ball. He was rapid, absolutely rapid. And, you know, he gets himself in the box. You know, he's obviously scored fantastic headers for us, the one against Arsenal away being one of note. But, yeah, like, you know, I think we were... You and I are concerned, brother, and we talked about on this podcast about the extent of the money we paid for him. But I think the difference is where he played for Arsenal, having played a number of games in the Premier League, so you could argue a proven Premier League player, versus, and what was it, £27 million, whatever he was, versus we're used to playing, like, paying a handful of million for the likes of, you know, Munez and that, but they're not Premier League proven, so they could flop. It's just Dougie's signings have always, so far, in the majority, apart from the likes of Luke Plange and stuff, have played off.
Well, Nketiah has been on those players we've been linked with for many, many seasons, so I think it was always going to happen. And going back to your point about his speed, bruv, also, for a bloke that's not the biggest, I assume he's probably about 6'5", 10, 6 foot, you know. But Premier League is land of the giants, so whereas 6'2", 6'3", is tends to be pretty standard. But he is so good in the air. I mean, even Wednesday night, we talk about the Southampton game. Even then, there was a great header that he won that flicked onto Eze, who ran on and then had a free kick. Eze was taken down and got a free kick. And obviously the Millwall goal, obviously we were talking earlier about the Brighton reverse fixture earlier in the season back in December, where he flicked it on for Ismail Assar to get his 5'9" there you go. So he's small, he's 2 inches smaller than me, there you go. But as I said, he is one of those players, perhaps because he's got that Premier League experience, he's learned to use his body and his heading ability a bit better than someone like Jean-Philippe Mateta. When he came to Palace, got smaller as he jumped. And now, only in the last sort of, I don't know, year, maybe, I don't know, 15 months, has learnt how to use his physicality and learnt how to hold the ball up now. Whereas that was always a frustration of mine with Mateta, that he wasn't physical, given the fact that he was, you know, we'll see, about 6'4", 6'5". He's a big bloke.
Yeah, I think the thing about Nketiah, and we saw it with Glenn Murray, is how early he jumps. You watch him in the, I watched him in the week at Southampton, and he jumps and he leverages the backs of the bigger, you know, because like you say, centre backs he's playing against are like 6'5" tall. He kind of leverages their backs to stay in the air and stay mobile. We used to talk about Muzza being like a salmon, you know, rising like a salmon, and it's very fair that Nketiah does the same sort of thing, and it's clearly something he's learnt and played to, and you have to play to your strengths and mitigate your, to some extent, what you're going to call the weaknesses. So yeah, fair play to him. He's definitely made a really good contribution, really good part of the team. He might not be a first starter, but he's definitely been proving his value for us.
And coming on to the Southampton game, you know, came on and I think in that, what did he get, 25-30 minutes against Southampton, you know, changed the game really. You know, he was fantastic in Southampton. Him and Matheus França, and made a few subs in that game, obviously rotated quite a lot given, you know, the fact that we'd played, when have we played before?
Cup game.
The cup game, cool. Sorry, the cup game on Saturday lunchtime. You know, obviously there had to be some sort of rotation. That was my thinking around Nketiah may start. But you know, he really, and the subs and the squad, you know, made a real difference. And we've got to have a word for Mateus France, haven't we? Given that he got his first Premier League goal for Crystal Palace in the 92nd minute, and really salvaged a point for Crystal Palace. It could have been a really disappointing result on Wednesday night.
That was the thing about that game, right? I said to you about 20 minutes in, we don't lose this game. I thought I said we'd win it, actually. And I was adamant we would, because we were so dominant in the first 20 minutes. their goal sort of came against the run of the plate when it came, but I think they did a number on us, actually. You know, Owen Atchew up front did very well for them in holding the ball up. He caused Lacroix problems, like he really did, and fair play to him, like, for doing so. I think Palace just ran out of time, really, and we were in sort of desperate straits, really, towards the end. And it's great to see France come on and get a goal, because, you know, fair play to the Palace fans, they really get behind him. He's got his own song and he's done nothing, really. To come on and get that goal, hopefully it gives him something to build from. And I said to you when he came on, he kept falling over, and I was like, you know, he's a new pair of boots. But, you know, it's clearly his want and desire to do well for us. We hope now that this is his chance to push on. And there's an opportunity for him to do so. You know, we haven't. He gives us something we haven't got. Since we lost Elise, we haven't got that surprise factor, the chaos factor. We talk about Bolasie. We haven't got that at the minute, and he provides that.
Yeah, I'm going back to what you're saying there, Bob, about Paul Iheanacho. You know, you and I have seen him in the flesh in Hernin in February 2019 when we went to watch FC SC Midtjylland versus Aalborg, and we saw him score one or two goals, I think.
I
think it was just one, actually, but you know, he dominated in that game, and I appreciate, you know, as I said earlier, Premier League is land of the giants. You know, in the Danish Superliga, the game that we watched, I think Jonas Okoro, the former Aston Villa defender, was playing, and it was like a giant versus ants out there. And even against sort of Lacroix and Gaye, who are big lads, you know, he made them look small yesterday. Yeah, so, you know, fair play to him, but like you say, bruv, Mateus França, let's hope this is the impetus we need to push on for him. He's got that bit of pace, that bit of unpredictability. You know, I don't think even Palace fans, you know, because we haven't seen enough of him, haven't seen what he can do just yet. So, it's exciting times, and this hope is another option on the bench.
Very good. Right, that part was part one, looking back. Part two, we're going to look forward. So, see you in part two. Hello and welcome back to part two of the 6 Point of Podcast. We've refuelled two fresh Guinnesses.
And a wee.
All important wee as well. Important in the half time break. So ready for part two. So as we said, this is looking forward in part two. Although I'm going to start with a bit of looking back in terms of the draw. Bruv, when you saw the final four in the hat for the semi-finals, who did you want?
Anyone but Man City, I think, is the answer there. I mean, albeit they're not having the best season, I did think, you know, who would I rather face in the final between Nottingham Forest or Man City? And I think when you get to the final, there's an argument to say you'd rather have Man City, given they're not having the best season, and Forest on a hell of a run. You know, they've got the impetus, the motivation, what's the word I'm looking for?
Drive,
yeah.
Momentum.
Momentum, that's the one. Momentum behind them. So there's a toss-up between those two teams. But I just think in the semi-finals, I wanted to avoid Man City. And look, Fulham, Aston Villa is going to be a tough game at Wembley. Albeit, you know, we've got a decent record against them this season. Palace do perform better away from home. But, you know, this is a team that has gone far in the Champions League, that are going to play PSG, two games against PSG before we play them in the semi-final at Wembley. It's not going to be a walkover by any stretch, and I think they're going to be a different prospect, and even more so given the fact that we played them already, you know,
three times
this season. You know, the two managers perhaps have got a chance to suss each other out. So it's going to be a tough game, but I'm not disappointed with the draw. It's always going to be a tough game, but I've got the belief, and I don't know, it's just something about it, but I just think that this year could be Palace's year, you know, and it would be poetic justice to go to Wembley and beat Man City in the final, having lost to Man United, 9 years ago?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think you're right. I mean, when you saw the draw, Man City was the one to avoid. I think anyone at Wembley on their day can win a game between those four teams. I would never downplay Man City. So like you say, I'd much rather face them in the final. There's something for them about... I saw today that Kevin De Bruyne is going to leave at the end of the season. So for him, this has got to be like a sign-out thing. So for them, this is the thing. They're not going to win the league, clearly. So this is the thing they want to win this year. So it's a massive opportunity for them. And the importance of it has obviously gone up tenfold. I think the thing that worries me about the Villa is just how well we've done against them this year. Well, it should be a reverse, right? I should be saying, well, you know, we've beaten them three times, so why not? But actually, it worries me because it feels that they owe us one in that sense. But you know, I just don't think you can call a Wembley game. I don't think you can. Like any football game, right? It depends. Obviously, Southampton, so we said in midweek we were expecting to win and win well, but we didn't. And I think this is a good example of where, who knows on the day.
I always think of the FA Cup like the playoffs, in the sense it's a lottery. You know, the league form doesn't really count. What you've done before in the season doesn't really count. You know, it's down to how you perform on the day. And I don't know, but there's just a feeling I've got, a sixth sense or a, you know, to intuition, whatever you call it. There's something there which just feels right about this season. And I think it would be very Palace to win the FA Cup and Oliver Glasner would leave for someone else as we embark on a European campaign.
Would you take that?
I'd rather the manager left than what I actually think is going to happen is that Palace will lose in the summer Jean-Philippe Meteta, Marc Gay and Ebrie Eze. I'd rather lose the manager than lose those two. But I guess the argument being that if you do qualify for European football by the league or for the FA Cup, there's the argument you say to these players, look, give us one more season, have your Tuesday nights, Thursday nights, whatever it is in Europe, whether that will equate for Marc Gay, who I think is destined to go to Liverpool. But, you know, I think perhaps you might hold on to those players a little bit longer if you do offer them that. But look, it's a great opportunity for Palace. It's going to be a great day out. We're going to be there. We've had it confirmed today that it's going to be on the Saturday at a 5:15 kickoff, which, I mean, that you and I said that day's going to be chaos anyway. QPR, Millwall, Chelsea all playing at home, and then in North London at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Eubank Ben is the fight as well. So there'll be, you know, I don't know, what's Tottenham hold?
65,000.
But given they're going to use the pitch as well, there might be 90,000 people there. You know, like, so it's going to be chaos getting in and out of London that day. Whether it's better or not on the Sunday when the marathon's on, who knows? But look, it's going to be hopefully a good day for Palace. Hopefully the sun's out. We'll go to Pizza Express, we'll have some dough balls and we'll have a good time.
I think regardless, it will be a good day out. And this is why I say the thing I said earlier about the final bit, semi-final bit at Wembley, is that I'd rather have the day out than not have the day out. To answer my own question earlier to you about like the manager and so on and so forth, about when, like, seriously, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Crystal Palace have never won the FA Cup. The lucky sods who saw Palace win the ZDS. Did Kev go to that? Kev?
In 1992.
Kev, did you go to that? Kev, if you were there, was John Collison there? Bet he was.
Probably.
If anyone was there, any listeners were there, let us know. Because that, for me, feels like a... Well, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. We've never lifted anything. So to see Palace lift something at Wembley...
you and I have seen us lift the playoff trophy.
Sorry. I mean...
The final competition,
yes. Like a nationally recognised thing. And you look at the likes of, like, you know, Wigan. Ben Watson lifted it for Wigan. You know, that's a lifetime achievement. So for me,
Sol Campbell lifted it for Portsmouth.
There you go. If Palace won the FA Cup, that is a life goal.
Oh, right.
I don't care what happens as a result. If we lost all 11 first team players, this is a bit dramatic, right? But I'm being serious with you. If Palace won this game and a relegation comes in a year's time, I would take winning the FA Cup.
Well, it's legendary status, isn't it? I mean, you only got to think back at that 1990 squad. And interestingly, Pardew was on, was he
on
Talksport? That was it. Did you see it as well? Yeah, where he talked about his squad not being as good as the FA Cup 1990 squad and this, that, and the other. But, you know, you think back to that FA Cup 1990 squad and how high regarded they are. They've all got legendary status, you know what I mean, in that sense. Like John Humphreys, Richard Shaw, Ian Wright, Mark Bright, Jeff Thomas.
Gary O'Reilly.
Gary O'Reilly. All these, the goal scorer. All these players that have, you know, who played in this innocuous game that finished in a draw and randomly we had a replay, you know, which is given today's sort of fixtures and the way that the Cup's played is just ridiculous to think that the FA Cup final could have a replay. But, you know, these players are held in such high regard and, you know, around Selhurst and Norwood Junction, they never to buy a pint of beer again, but not that you would go drinking around Selhurst and Norwood Junction, but you know what I mean, like that's it. Oh, it's gonna be going to Trude.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I'd rather go to the Moon and Stars, but like the point being though, these people are held in such high regard that if these players could do it, bruv, and like you say, even if they were to depart, you know, a few months later, it would be incredible, and the manager would be considered a legend, even if he did leave for RB Leipzig or wherever. You know, this would be one for the ages and a squad for the ages. And you know, like I said before, I've just got this feeling. There's something about this season. There's something in my blood, you know, that which makes me think this could be it. This could be the year we do it. This could be the year that Crystal Palace lift the FA Cup. And right. That would be, like you say, bruv, I would want to be putting a star on our shirt above the badge, because I don't know if anyone would do it since, do it after that. No, certainly nobody's done it since. Look at the celebrations we've had in midweek with Newcastle celebrating the League Cup trophy, and fair play to them. You know, if Palace won the League Cup, I'd be getting my balls out as well.
What can I say to that? I can't really respond to that. I just think it's definitely a lifetime thing. I think it's something that, I think, for many Palace fans who, you know, they've seen Palace in the Premier League for, you know, probably most of their Palace supporting career. For us who have seen two administrations, multiple defeats, you know, I think back to my favourite ever Palace game. You know, it sounds weird to say it, but one of them is Hillsborough, Sheffield Wednesday away 2-2. You know,
dead leg. Thanks for that.
Just the reaction, the feelings you're left with from those games are what's important. So yeah, like, you know, an FA Cup final, a victory at Wembley, seeing Palace lift that. I mean, like I say, you said about the Wembley game that we went to with Tom and Jamin and, you know, Paddy and who was captain that day? That's terrible. Who's captain of the day? Who did Paddy lift the cup with? Jednak. Paddy and Jednak sharing, sort of lifting the cup. You know, that goes down in like a lifetime memory. It does, doesn't it? So an FA Cup victory is up there with it, if not above it. So
massively above. I think the FA Cup is above any sort of promotion, brother, to be fair. That is the pinnacle. You are the best in England in that cup competition. And, you know, I'm kind of glad, like you said earlier, about the fact that we draw in Aston Villa, because I think Palace's cup run, people, the doubters will look back on that cup run where say, all right, who we play? Doncaster, Stockport, Millwall. You know, this is the first Premier League test for Crystal Palace in the FA Cup.
Fulham.
But you know, this is the second Premier League test for Palace in the FA Cup. But in the sense,
there's lots of parallels there.
What do you mean?
Well, so if you think about the 1990 FA Cup run,
Cambridge. Yeah. I don't know who else did we play. I was free.
Who were playing the 1990 FA Cup? So Cambridge was definitely there. Like you say, Jeff Thomas scored the goal, didn't he, away. Jumped in front of the away end on the railings.
Well, obviously Liverpool in the semi-final. I don't know the other game. As I say, I was 3 years old. But
there's parallels in the
sense. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know, lower league opposition to get to the final. And I think, you know, the underdogs element as well plays strongly to Palace's. Yeah. Thing. I mean, you could argue therefore Man City would be better to place in the semi-final, but then we haven't got a classic big team to win the final. But I think the thing is, if you look at it this year, like every team, it's important for them to win it. So Forest obviously had a fantastic year. You know, they're likely to finish in the top four, aren't they, based on their performance? Yeah. So you know, tick for them, but they want to solidify that and finish off the season with a cup win. And it's been a long time since they won the FA Cup. Man City, like I said, the De Bruyne thing and just generally the cup run for them is a way to salvage their season with their league form, where they're probably going to end up. And then also for Villa, they haven't won it for a long, long time. So every club is invested in it in some way, shape or form. And let's just hope it's the Palace that come out in on top.
Point there, bruv. What a brilliant FA Cup it's been this season, to be fair. I mean, look, I really enjoyed Exeter's run, albeit I know, I appreciate they got knocked out by Forest. I really enjoyed that game. You know, we saw Doncaster, say, against us. You know, Preston, who competed valiantly up until the second half against Aston Villa. You know, this has been the year I feel that the magic of the Cup has come alive again. And I think perhaps it's been managers like Klopp and I'm trying to think of other Premier League managers now, Guardiola and others perhaps, who had not devalued the Cup but not given it the respect it deserves. And I think that, you know, the thing that people love about the FA Cup is that it's almost like the World Cup in the sense that you'll go into work on a Monday, if you do work, go into the office on a Monday, and you'll talk to people, right? Or you talk about in work, for example, I'm just using that example, right? And people will talk about the FA Cup and how good it's been brilliant this year to talk about Preston, Doncaster, you know, obviously Stockport in the third round, obviously it was good for them, you know.
The Plymouth-Liverpool game.
Plymouth, obviously, you know, Plymouth who look, you know, to be fair, they're
fought, dead and buried,
they did, they've had a bit of resurgence, but, you know, fair play to them. You know, this is what the Cup is all about, is that about the teams that nobody expects to win these games, nobody expects to win these cups, and that's why it's brilliant that we've got an Aston Villa, we've got a Crystal Palace, we've got a Nottingham Forest. It's boring seeing Man United, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City win the Cup every year. It's give the others a bit of hope. You know, that's what the romance of the Cup is about. You know, it's about giving people hope, a bit of something to dream about. And, you know, bruv, as a Crystal Palace fan, I'm certainly dreaming.
Well, look, and like you say, if Palace don't get through or don't win it, the second best thing for football as a football fan more generally is a team other than a big team winning it. So, and you've got three teams in the mix there, so let's hope that is the case. Look, obviously, as you say, we're hoping that Palace are going to be that team, and you know, we'll be supporting them all the way. We look forward to planning out our Wembley trip. Kev, Tom, Ian, big shouts to you guys, jamming hopefully as well. Be good to get the gang back together, Pizza Express.
Free doubles.
Relive all that. But yeah, look, hopefully we can get to do that together, and it's a day out for friends and family, right, as well. Colleagues, as we say on the
Well, that's the other thing, Rob. I just hope that in this FA Cup final that Palace give a better account of themselves than they did against Chelsea, because I think in that, what was it, 2022, we had so much optimism and so much hope, because I think that second half of the season wasn't great for Palace. And that FA Cup helped keep the dream alive. And on the day, Patrick Vieira decided to go, what was it, three at the back? And it was just strange. He decided to like try and shut up shop against Chelsea. It just massively backfired. And you know, I think we've got a manager now who knows how to manage his cup competitions, puts a lot of impetus into it. And I think that this is the best chance we've had, or certainly in my lifetime, of winning the FA Cup. I mean, barring the 1990 when I was 3 years old. So I'm discounting that one.
I'm sure you remember Melvin's barbecue.
Of course I do.
We went to Melvin's barbecue that day. Watching on tiny television, Melvin's barbecue. We were there watching the game, and I remember Ian Wright coming on. I remember it.
Melvin's barbecue, I think of the loss against Trabzonspor when you and I went in the Intertoto Cup in 1998 and we lost 1-0 or 2-0 at home to Trabzonspor, and we went to Melvin's barbecue afterwards. That's what I remember about barbecue. But also, you know, I'll never forgive Mark Edwin for that. But never mind. I think we're gonna wrap it up there, bro. I know we've got to do a Brighton preview. Perhaps we'll do it in the next pub. Perhaps not. We'll find out. You know, if it's a part three, then if not, goodbye. But
we'll do a part three.
He's committed to it now.
And can you also please insert the you know, the famous clip of the pod at Wembley versus?
I can't do that. So that was the thing I sent around in WhatsApp last week. There was that. There was such a hype of the Chelsea semi-final, of us feeling so excited about the semi-final and shouting and screaming. Come on! I mean, we'd had a lot to drink at that point. Many Peronis have been sunk in.
I blame Kevin.
ZZs and pizza. I blame Kevin's boots. But I think we did the second half of that, the review of that on Zoom, and it was such a downbeat
episode. I was sat in bed during that, yeah.
With Edgar David's glasses on. But look, we're back for part three. He's committed to it now, so I can't edit this bit out. So apologies if this does end abruptly, but we will be doing part three.
With Kev's boots. You should remember Kev's boots. Do you know what? This is the thing about these days, right? We're joking about Kev's boots, but seriously, Kev's boots were part of that day. I remember meeting you and Kev at the Wetherspoons, and we did the pint on the head thing.
Smashed. Absolutely smashed. We were battered by the time we left that Wetherspoons.
Just turned up with my Palace on the way to Wembley shirt, you know. And I'm gutted they're not doing them again.
Well, why, no, to be fair, I mean, it's not great, the sort of stuff they've released this year. I think the Boom 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 Mateta shirt. I've already pre-ordered it. Yeah. I've done it. I've already pre-ordered it because I don't know if I wear it on the day. I might wear this, which I'm.
Lombardo 7 for me.
Does it still fit? Jokes. Filled out since then, didn't you?
That's that season as well.
It is. 96. No, 798.
Those are the days when you had kits for 2 years. Home kits for 2 years.
That's right. Adidas team wear kits. No, for the record, I am wearing a 1996
training jumper.
TDK Adidas. It's fantastic.
I had the red version, didn't I?
You did. You had burgundy, I'd say, rather than red.
I wish I knew what that was. It's probably a charity shop.
It probably is, mate. It probably is. It's probably going for £120 on eBay somewhere. But look, let's wrap it up now. Part three.
To follow,
we're going to jump on the 104 and go to Beckenham.
Oh,
yeah, we are. That's what we're doing. We're deciding. Go have a beer.
Da-da-da-da-da. Check. 1, 2, 1, 2. You testing or not? Double testing. Hello, welcome back to part three of the Six Pointer podcast. We move locations from Sydenham to Beckenham. We are now in the BR3 Brewery, first day launch event.
Kelsey Road, is this what it's called? We call it Kelsey Road?
I guess so.
Just off Beckenham High Street.
Yeah. The old school Beckenhamites, it's the old sort of Furley and Baker junction.
Yeah. Big up to Kudu and the BR3 Brewery and the guys that have been supporting us since day one. And
sponsored by Tanio Pizza.
Yeah. They're just read in, so. But no, big up BR3 Brewery. And the guys who have done excellent work. I mean, I think you and I have recorded a couple of pods, bruv, outside the BR3 Brewery.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we definitely have a few drunken nights in lockdown. But great to be here. Great to see a local business doing well and going from strength to strength. And, you know, I think for me, the one thing I can relate it to is Gypsy Hill Brewery, you know, that you and I saw them in the late 2000s sort of starting up. And I was amazed when I went up to Glasgow to see David Hilverty, went to a Celtic game, and I went to a local pub near here, and I was like, my God, you've got Gypsy Hill on tap. This is fantastic. So let's hope that one day the BR3 Brewery will reach those heights.
Yeah, like you say, it's nice to see local companies doing well, and big shout to all the original pod crew as well. I know David Hilverty did a pod of you a long time ago that was very well listened to. So thanks to everyone who's been involved in the pod over the years. But yeah, here in the BR3 Brewery, enjoying a, what have you got? I've got a Pilsner.
I've got a brown ale. Very nice. Good beer, mate. I wasn't a fan of the coconut stout. A bit too
that
sweet.
It was a bit chocolatey, wasn't it? It was nice.
For a flan.
Very much so. So look, part three is all about looking forward. It's all about the game tomorrow. So Brighton home tomorrow. It's always a big game, obviously, for some Palace fans, more important than others. Obviously, me and you, bruv, I know we've talked about it before in this pod. It's all about the Millwall games that are our rivalry, but you know, this one has a bit of bite to it, so it's always good inside the ground. Obviously, forget the rubbish outside the ground, not interested in that. It's all about the stuff on the pitch. You looking forward to it?
I am, bruv. Purely for the fact that I think there's two teams going in different trajectories here. Like, obviously, we started off the season very slowly and we're not up trajectory. I think Brighton started off fast out the blocks, and perhaps they're struggling to maintain that momentum. Yeah, and albeit, you know, they're still, a couple of places above us. I think probably maybe, I haven't looked at the table, I'd imagine they're probably 6 or 7 points above us. But, you know, there's an opportunity here, like we said in midweek, given the fact that it was a blessing in disguise in midweek for Palace, the fact that, you know, that we didn't win and the other teams around us didn't win. There's an opportunity for us to beat one of the teams near and around us and continue that promotion push. And given the performance we had in them back in December that we touched on earlier, you know, they're going to be up for it. Obviously, we talked earlier, you and I, off pod, how surprised we are this kept at a 3 p.m. kickoff, given the normal nonsense that goes around it, and I don't know whether pubs are going to be open or closed around the stadium. I imagine there'll be a few of them that will be closed on police advice, but 3 o'clock seems to be a recipe for disaster, you know, because people could start drinking quite early and cause trouble. Let's hope there are none of that. You and I have already said, let's get in the ground early and avoid all the nonsense, because that, for us especially, the football isn't about that. It's about, you know, what happens on the pitch rather than what happens outside it. And given what's happened in the pitch earlier this season, you know, Palace have got an opportunity here to push on and really get 3 points tomorrow. Not, and my prediction is we will. I think it'll be a tight game. Looking back at the history of Palace Brighton games at Selhurst Park, I think the last 5 or 6 have finished 1-1. So if you're a betting man, put a score draw on, but for me, I fancy Palace to edge this one.
I think we need a reaction, don't we, from midweek, because it wasn't great in terms of the performance, but also the result. I think there were parts of Wednesday night that were very positive, but big parts that weren't. And I think in a game like coming up, you know, we want a reaction. Look, Brighton are going to want a reaction because they're out of the cup, obviously. I mean, they're going to want to play well against the rivals.
Been to the cup there, bruv. I watched vast majorities of that Brighton, not the first game. It was one of the most boring games of football I've ever watched.
It was.
And I appreciate the way Forest set up to catch people in the break, and given that I think Brighton got spanked, what was it, 7-0 against Forest early in the season, I think perhaps that influenced their setup. But it was two teams going out to cancel each other out, and I said after 20 minutes this is going to penalties, and I'd wish that perhaps there was some sort of law in football that you could flip a coin and go to that, because if anything was going to happen, it was that game. That was destined for penalties. It was a terrible game of football, no more summed up by Gary Lineker and the others going to at half time struggling things to talk about. What are you showing me? You're showing me,
well, I'm just reflecting on Brighton's recent results and the fact that, you know, we talk about the cup game, obviously went out of penalties, but also midweek they've had a bad result at home against Villa, so their fans are going to be wanting to see something different. Palace fans are going to be something different from their team, so it's going to be an interesting one. You know, for me it screams 0-0. I hope you're
1-1.
I hope you're right in terms of goals, because I think it would be good for Palace to pick things up a bit, and, you know, I think a positive performance we want to see. For me, bruv, it all comes down to the cup. I think the focus is now, for me, on the cup.
Show me the table. If you can bring it up the table right now.
10 points behind Brighton.
I'd be interested to see the difference between Palace and Brighton right now, where we are. So Brighton are sitting in 8th on 47 points. We're on 40. Okay, so realistically, we're 2 wins behind them, right? So if you cut that deficit in half tomorrow, or just under half tomorrow, right, Palace could go up to 11th given the results. And we've got a game in hand as well because of our cup run, among other teams as well. And this is why I was so pleased to see the Man United result the other day, because, you know, they could have overtaken us, and we've got a game in hand and around a lot of teams around us. So look, this is an opportunity for Palace, like Wednesday night was. If we are going to continue this league push up to European places, this is what we need to take into account. And if you can get 3 points against Brighton, still 3 points of teams in the sort of the vicinity around you, this is what you need to do. So my prediction, 2-1 Palace.
What's more important though for this game tomorrow? Is it performance or is it outcome, like result?
I mean, for me, performance, I think if you're asking the majority of Palace fans who really care about the Brighton rivalry, they're going to say the result. Yeah. You know, you can win ugly against Brighton. And I think we have done that in the past. You know, you've got to think back to those lockdown games and Christian Benteke, 2 shots on target, 2 goals. Where it was Mateta scored his first goal for Crystal Palace in that game as well, wasn't it?
Oh, well,
and I can only remember back to that. Was it a Monday or Tuesday night? I think it was during lockdown. It must have been when we couldn't leave our houses.
Mateta game.
Mateta and Benteke. Yeah, when we won 2-0.
The same team, Mateta and Benteke on the same team.
Seriously? Yeah, but I think Benteke came with the bench.
Mate, that is a stat.
Benteke came with the bench and got the winner. Not, I just remember for that game, I apologised to my neighbours because it was like 10 o'clock at night and Benteke hit the back of the net and the cap went flying. Everyone went flying. It was, I'm pretty sure it must have been was it November or September 2020, or maybe it was 21. I mean, to be honest with you, that period of my life is a complete blur because of what happened during that period of time. But Palace won 2-0. Mateta scored. Did McAllister equalise for Brighton, and then Benteke scored in the 92nd. Go on, give me the stat.
So 20. You're right. You know, 2021 season. So they.
What was the date? Give me the date.
Mateta.
What was the date? Give me the date.
20th of February 21. So that was what? That was immediate. Is it immediate lockdown? 21.
Well, 2020 was lockdown, so this is a year after. But we still couldn't leave houses. But
no. So Mateta, 28 minutes, sort of flesh the flick.
Jordan Ayew, great work down the wing.
Yeah, they then equalised on 55, and then you're right, the Benteke
goal. Was it McAllister? No, who was it?
No.
Veltman,
whoever he is. Man of the match. Sorry, the Premier League website's got Man of the Match Mateta.
Go on, JP.
I mean, to be fair, that was a ridiculous flick from him. But yeah,
I'm pretty sure Benteke came from the bench as well. So Benteke, I don't think Benteke started that game. I'm pretty sure that Mateta started that game, got the first goal, and Benteke came off the bench to score the winner. If my memory serves me correctly, that's the way it turned out. But Matthew is furiously googling right now to try and find
game.
Out.
I'm trying to find the game without all the blooming adverts on top.
Well,
so we're saying
2021.
I can edit this. This is fine. I mean, I probably won't. So if you're listening to this, hopefully you're enjoying the background noise of Tanya Pizza and people placing pepperoni pizza orders.
Oh, here we go.
You go on Google, bruv. That'll tell you where you need to go.
There you go.
Starting lineup. BBC News.
Jesus
Christ.
This
is a nightmare. This is a nightmare. Go up to the top. It's top. Go on, who started that game, bruv?
So Mateta started, yeah. Mateta, Ayew and Townsend was the front three for Palace.
So Mateta came with the bench on. Did it tell you when he comes on? You scroll down? When he comes on the bench?
Oh, yeah, look. No.
But he came on. That's all you need to know. He came on and he scored the winner. But anyway, the main takeaway I was trying to make for that is that the cat went absolutely flying. And I think that was a Monday or Tuesday night. And I must have woken the neighbours up because I seem to remember there was a fair bit of injury time in that game as well.
It's in the flat?
Back in the flat. Yeah, in Anley. Yeah.
We got Muzza.
Yeah, Muzz went flying because he was just like, what on earth is going on here? Why on a Monday or Tuesday night are you going mental at 10 o'clock
what?
At night?
Do you know what? I think Cats and Palace goals watching at home is a bit of a theme because you remember Stampy in the playoffs.
Oh shit! Yes, I remember Stampy against Charlton at home when
Dickie Joy
scored that goal against Charlton. Oh, we were absolutely loopy then. Yeah. Absolutely loopy. Yeah.
Brilliant.
A bit of Metro, a bit of fish and chips, and a few beers and enjoying the Beckenham night. So
classic,
good times. Right, we've gone off piece here because we were supposed to be previewing the Brighton game tomorrow night.
Well, so Mateta's going to score an absolute banger tomorrow, I think.
Money's on JP. I wonder if he'll still be wearing the old earpiece thing.
He will.
So Matthew's plan is to, for Wembley, to mass produce these things, red and blue stripes, and sell them outside on Wembley Way.
It's like a Donald Trump sort of like ear covering.
Yeah,
Mateta style.
Yeah. So whilst you must remember you can't drink a beer on Wembley Way, you can wear a Mateta earmuff. Yeah. So we're going to get them in production, 6 Pointer Podcast branded.
So if you see me down Wembley Way, get your Mateta earmuffs, exactly. You know, that's me.
This is going to be funding the next beer drinking episode of the 6 Pointer Podcast. So please do contribute. I don't think there's much else to say, is there, bruv? My prediction was 2-1 tomorrow. What's your prediction?
0-0.
0-0.
Yeah.
Even though I've told you before this that the last five ones are still have finished 1-1.
I just feel that for both teams, it's a very tense game. Brighton will need to have a performance for their supporters given their cup exit and their 3-0 defeat in the week. And then for Palace, it's about how we turn around to Southampton. But I think everything for me is eyes on the cup game. And I just think it's going to be a bit of a distraction for us for the next few weeks. But
a lot of games to go before them, though, bro, to be fair. Like,
is there three games to go?
I think so.
Yeah, so I think the
Palace, including the Arsenal game, which is moved for telly as well, which is, I think it's going to happen the Wednesday before the Saturday.
So look,
for people that don't go to Palace very often, you're going to get a lot of Palace on TV, because I think the Sky game is Wednesday night. BBC.
We've got the Saturday game, Man City away. That's a lunchtime game. Then we've got the following Wednesday's Newcastle, which is a rearranged game because of the game of the week. Yep. We've got Bournemouth at home, the Arsenal away, rearranged game on the Wednesday. And then the 26th is the weekend, is the 17:15, the 5:15 game.
On BBC One, so...
Is it?
Get tuned in. Yeah, this is the good thing, all right? This is also adding to the fuel of what I was saying earlier, right? This is Palace's chance to show to the masses that we've got what it takes to win the FA Cup. You know, Palace, BBC One, prime location, Saturday night, people are going to be scrambling around things to watch before the Eubank Ben fight, are going to find Palace versus Villa, and they're going to see Palace beating Aston Villa and going to the FA Cup final.
I mean, also to that point, the build up to it, four of the five games were on telly. So, you know, the Man City game's on telly because it's lunchtime, the Newcastle midweek game, is that on telly Wednesday?
Even if it's not, there'll be a stream, let's be honest.
Wednesday 23rd's got to be, and then same as the Saturday game. So, yeah, I think it's an opportunity for Palace to build a generation of Palace fans, right? More people who are wearing the Palace training jumpers out on the
only 50 made.
So, you know, it's an opportunity, and it's hope we take it, right? Anyway, look, we're going to sign off there. Time to get some food. As always, at Six Pointer Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, for dropping a message. We do appreciate it. We know we're rubbish at reading them out and engaging with them, but I know Luke replies to them, so thank you very much. And,
on that message, big up Tom, Simon, I'm trying to think about me. Everyone that's messaged in. Appreciate you getting in touch, and I hope you're enjoying this 50-minute episode that might be less after I edit it down, but hope everyone's enjoying it. Thank you for support, and always
up the Palace.
The Six Pointer Podcast.